Initially, I wanted this episode to be about a blog that Notion has written and how they're starting to move to sharding, and because of limitations in Postgres, freeze mechanisms. But as I'm starting writing or talking about this article, I have a little bit of a weakness when it comes to understanding Postgres locking. There's just so much that conflict with each other when it comes to Postgres. There are, of course, three level of locks: table locks, page, and row level locks. But then table locks is not really what you think they are. You know, to me, and mostly most DBAs, I don't consider myself a DBA, but if someone said, hey, acquire a table lock, that means it's a table lock. You can't do anything to that table. But that's not true in Postgres. There are, what? I'm looking at 6, 7, 8 types of table locks. So a table lock by certain type, it just means that something happened to this table. It doesn't mean you cannot edit this table. You can absolutely do that. It's just an indication that. Same thing with the row level locks, which is easier to understand, and page locks, which we have zero knowledge about Postgres there, at least from the doc. But that's what I wanted to do in this video. I just want to go through the different types of locks, confusing as they are name-wise, and just try to know what operation acquire what kind of lock. If I do a vacuum full, what can I do to my table concurrently? If I do a vacuum normal, the auto vacuum, what can I do? What can't I do? If I do a truncate, what happens? If I do a normal insert, can I do another insert in the table? If I update a row, can I update that same row? These are the questions that I wanted to understand before I jump into taking out like a bigger project, actual things that happen, and try to kind of talk about something that I don't understand, right? That's what I wanted to do in this channel. Let's jump into it. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcast. With that said, let's get on the show.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, so looking at chapter 13 from the dog, concurrency control, and specifically chapter 13.3, explicit locking. I don't know why they are called explicit locking, because most of the things that we're going to talk about here are not really explicit. It just happened implicitly as a side effect from you running certain operations. And I suppose before we jump into this, we might need to define what locks are. Locks are critical for concurrency and ensuring integrity when it comes to data, right? They are used in some form in the operating system. If you talk data structures courses, you will see that locks are talked about in terms of semaphores or mutexes, you know, where a certain variable can be locked so that if multiple threads, which is what concurrency is, right? If you're a single user, single thread, you don't have this problem. You don't need to have acquire any locks, technically, I suppose. So we acquire mutexes and locks to ensure correctness. The types that are familiar and popular are shared locks. If someone is a read a value, think of it like an object, a row, a document, right? They can acquire a shared lock. And if someone else acquired the same shared lock, you can acquire unlimited number of shared locks. Readers are called reader locks. And then if someone wants to update, there must be no shared locks to update that. Why? And the reason is because if I'm reading something, I want to make sure it doesn't change. Goal of shared locks, right? So that's the locks we know. And exclusive locks, of course, will give you exclusive access. The moment you obtain an exclusive lock on that object or row, nobody can change it. Why? Because nobody can acquire a shared lock. And that's basically the two simplest type of locks, which are also aggressive if you think about it, right? Because if in real databases, like when you read something, you absolutely other transaction can change that thing, right? So real databases don't really acquire access or shared locks and exclusive when you do normal operations. They don't do that, right? They do other type of lighter weight locks. And that's what we're going to talk about here. Can you still acquire access, shared locks and exclusive lock? Yeah, manually, explicitly say, hey, I want an access shared lock on this. I want to simulate this experience. And you can absolutely do that. With that out of the way, let's start with this document. All right, so we're talking about explicit locking here. Four types, or actually more than that. Table locks, things that happen at the table level. And again, it's not really locking the whole table. Don't think of it like this way. Like, oh, I'm locking the whole table. Nobody can do anything. There are lighter weight things that happen at the table level that tells Postgres things here. Yeah. Row level locks, things happen at the row level. Page level, because databases work with pages, you can lock a certain page. And again, we don't have many information about that particular one. Deadlocks, things that happen when two transactions try to manage the same resource and they are waiting on each other, you end up with a deadlock. Advisory lock, that's also called application locks, level locks, which is apps can create this concept of a mutex that is manually created by the app, but those live in the database. So other apps that try to acquire the same advisory lock will wait, and you can do so much cool things with those. You can serialize as a different logical operation, even if it's not really a transaction, right? Let's say your application is performing an operation, but this operation is also multiple transactions, right? So you need to protect the whole operation, not just that transaction level, because you have protection at the transaction level. So you can operate at that level. So let's say you want to prevent people from running this operation twice concurrently. You can't just do that with normal transactions, because your operation might acquire multiple transactions, and at a whole, it's one unit of work, right? So advisory lock. All right, let's get it started. PostgreSQL provides various lock mode to concurrent control access to the data and tables. These modes can be used for application controlled locking in situations where MVCC does not give the desired behavior, as I told you, right? Because MVCC, which is multi-version concurrency control, doesn't always give you what you want. Sometimes you need more, and that control is given to you as well. Also, most Postgres commands automatically acquire locks of appropriate modes to ensure that reference tables are not dropped or modified in incompatible ways while the command executes. And that's an interesting thing, right? So they're giving an example here. For example, truncate cannot safely be executed concurrently with other operations. So it obtains an access exclusive lock on the table to enforce that. Access exclusive, as we're going to see here, is the highest level of locks. It's the most aggressive one. You do that when you actually want to change the layout of the whole thing, right? It's acquired by truncate, because let's see, how do you do actually truncate operation? You might say, oh, delete all the table. No, that's just so not performant. Because you know that's a truncate that is undoable, what you do is you literally create another table and point the pointer of this table, your name points to the empty table. Leave the whole thing, that old table just goes away. That's how I would do it. You know, it's an instant. That's how you truncate your table. And to do that, you want to make sure that nobody actually reading that at all, right? And how do you know that? Through other type of locks that we're going to talk about. All right, so let's get started with table level locks. The list below shows the available lock modes and contexts in which they are used automatically by Postgres. Again, it's an automatic operation. It's not really implicit. So this chapter called explicit locking is a little bit confusing. You can also acquire any of these locks explicitly with the lock command. Interesting. I didn't know that. So you can acquire any of these, just say lock and simulate an access share, simulate an access exclusive, like a truncate, like as if you run a truncate. Huh, that's very interesting. Probably not a good idea unless you know what you're doing, right? Remember that all these locks mode are table level locks, even if the name contains the word raw, which is what confuses me here. You might say something called raw share. It doesn't really mean it's a raw lock. It's actually a table lock that has happened to be called raw share. The names of the lock modes are historical. To some extent, the names reflect the type, the typical usage of each lock mode, but the semantics are all the same. The only real difference between one lock mode and another is the set of lock modes with which each conflicts. That's what matters. When we see a lock mode conflicts with another, and that's where the blocking will happen when it comes to transaction. Two transactions cannot hold locks of conflicting modes on the same table at the same time. So if transaction A is holding certain lock, right, type, and the transaction B want to hold a conflicting type, right, it will conflict and they will block each other. However, a transaction never conflicts with itself, right? For example, it might acquire exclusive lock and later acquire access share lock on the same table. That's fine. As long as it's the same transaction, that's fine. Like, it's similar to how you write and you can read your own writes, right? And you can write your own writes. You can change the things you just changed. That's fine. But other transactions can't do that to you. So that's a very interesting thing. And I want to start, instead of starting with these lock modes, I want to start with the most aggressive one, access exclusive. This one conflicts with locks of all modes, and you can manually acquire that using something called the lock command, or it can be implicitly acquired by these operations. This mode guarantees that the holder is the only transaction accessing the table in any way. That's the most aggressive one, right? You can't read, you can't change, you can't do anything when this lock is acquired by another transaction. Example, drop table. If you're in the process of dropping table, nobody can read it, nobody can write to it. If you're in the process of truncating, which you must mean that you acquired an access exclusive, nobody can do anything to this table, can read it, can do anything. Right? That includes another transaction trying to truncate that same table, right? Access exclusive kind of conflict with access exclusive, right? Reindex. If you want to reindex that whole table, I want to make sure that I'm reading this and I don't want anything to change it, right? Because in reindexing the table, or even create index for that matter, should acquire the same lock, because I don't want anyone changing the state of the table, inserting new stuff while I'm reindexing, because I can miss stuff, right? Because as I'm reading, someone just changed something. If someone just changed something, then I'm not gonna pick it up, and my index is gonna be out of sync. Cluster, if I want to cluster my table such that on a certain column, I want to reorder the heap and the table on that column, I can call this command. And the moment you're starting shoveling things up in the table, changing tuple location, that will require you to essentially reset the tuple IDs, create new tuple IDs. And as a result, not only you have to update all the indexes, but also you have to change, you have to make sure nobody's screwing with that table in that process. Vacuum full. Vacuum is an operation that removes dead tuples that are not visible by anyone, right? It's dead. Nobody's needing that record anymore, because even if it's like an older running transaction that still needs that, for example, it's a repeatable read that requires MVCC and needs that row. No, all these row transactions are committed. This row has been dead. Someone updated, someone deleted it, and that's done. We have zero reason to keep that row. If that's the case, vacuum will just remove it, freeing up space in that page for other tuples to go in that page. That's the only thing that vacuum does. Vacuum full is, here's an example. Before we go to vacuum full, for normal vacuum, if you have a page with all of it filled with dead tuples, let's say, not just page, 10 pages. Let's say you deleted a massive number of rows in your table. If you just do a normal vacuum, eventually it will mark all these pages as the rows are deleted. So those pages are still there, occupying space on the table, but they are free to be inserted in. You can insert stuff in those pages, right? That does not mean it will be reclaimed and sent back to disk. No, you're still acquiring whatever, how many pages times 8K, which is the default page size, right? Vacuum full actually does that. Vacuum full removes, physically remove all these space, you know, compact the table, rename things if necessary. Like if you have like pages 0 to 10 and all are dead, the whole pages are renamed, I think, right? It's like, okay, from 0 to 10, it's like unused now, and pages 11 and forward are used. No, the whole thing will be just cleaned out, right? We started over from page 0 and start moving data around. So it's shuffling the whole structure. So it has to acquire access exclusive, right? To do all this thing. Refresh materialize view. A materialize view is a view that is materialized, that is persisted on disk, right? And to make sure, so because it's persisted instead of actually on demand, you query the database and give you the view. Materialize view is faster, but they can go out of sync, right? So to refresh the materials view, we want to make sure that while I'm refreshing, while I'm copying data, I make sure that nobody actually touches that original table. So I don't want anybody to touch anything, right? So I'm going to acquire that and remove it. Of course, concurrently can be added to indexing, to certain things that to allow other operations to concurrently do things. Like you can create index concurrently. Create index can lock the table, of course, right? With access exclusive. I don't see it here, but I'm pretty sure it does. If re-index is there, why is create index not there? It doesn't make sense, right? I would imagine like create index will also block. So create index concurrently doesn't need to. And we're going to go with that. Now we understood the most aggressive, let's understand the least aggressive, which is access share, right? So access exclusive and access share. These are conflicting locks. Access share is acquired by selects. Normal select, not like select for update, just normal select. If you like do a select on a table, right? Or if you select a row from that table, the whole table is locked with this type of lock, which is access share for that transaction. So access share lock, now we obtain it. That means the moment anyone selects the selects something, right, and leaves that transaction open, you cannot truncate the table, you cannot delete the table, you cannot drop it, you cannot do anything, like re-index or vacuum full, this version will be blocked if someone is actually reading. So that's very critical. So vacuum full is really not something you have to do, but normal vacuum shouldn't really block that. And that's what I want to understand truly as I dig deep into this. Let's continue. So access share, simple operations, right? Role share. A role share is the select commands acquire a lock of this mode on all tables for on which one of the for update, for no key update, for share, or for key share options specified. In addition to access share locks on any other tables that are referenced without any explicit for options. So because we're reading, like we're doing a select statement, so we're acquiring a shared lock, a shared access share, but then we're also acquiring a row share on the table. So someone in this table did a row share. And I know the names are very confusing, right? Which means someone did an actual select for update. So technically, they didn't really change they didn't really edit anything, but they're acquiring it for update or for share or for key share. These operations will acquire an explicit lock at the row level, which we're going to talk about, right? But also acquire a table level lock called row share. So it gives indication. This gives an indication to Postgres that something is happening on this table, right? Row exclusive. So what happened here? Row exclusive. What happens when you do the normal DML stuff? Like if you insert a row, if you delete a row, if you update a row, the table is marked as row exclusive for that transaction. Again, we're still at the table level. So what happened with that? Those kind of conflict with other operations. They kind of conflict with share and share row exclusive and exclusive and access exclusive. We're going to come to that like in a minute. And when we see the table. So if you do a merge and insert and update, this is acquired at the table level. And it will tell you what can and can't be done. And of course, access exclusive, the moment you do that or select, you can't re-index the table, you can't vacuum, right? Because that conflicts with anything. But I'm interested in the small things here, and that's what I'm really interested in. Okay. Share update exclusive. We're getting interested now. Share update exclusive, right? Conflicts with share update exclusive. Share row exclusive. It's getting ridiculous right now, right? This mode protects the table against concurrent schema changes and vacuum runs. Here's interesting. This one, share update exclusive, is acquired with vacuum. Normal vacuum, not full, because we know vacuum full re-changes the whole structure, right? And acquires an access exclusive. Normal vacuum, right, acquires simple share update exclusive, which is slightly lightweight. What can you do with this guy, right? When you do that, you acquire this share update exclusive, and we'll see what can't we do with this, right? Does it conflicts with share update exclusive, which is itself, so no two vacuums can run this at the same time, right? It conflicts with share. We don't know what share is yet. We're going to come to that. It conflicts with share row exclusive. Share row exclusive, which we didn't explain yet. It talks with exclusive, which we didn't talk about yet. And then exclusive lock, right? This mode's protect table against schema changes. Like if you're making a concurrent schema changes and vacuum runs, this will protect the table against it. So what things are acquires this? If you do an analyze, if you want to actually get the table statistics, update that table statistic, you acquire that. So technically speaking, so I can absolutely do a vacuum and continue to insert rows in the table because those guys do not conflict with each other. We'll look at the table in a minute and understand this. Create index concurrently acquires that, right? So you can still create rows. That's what really matters to me, right? I can create, update, and delete while create index concurrently. I can do that, right? I can do create in statistics. I can re-index concurrently and do all of that. What is share now? share. Conflex withdraw exclusive, share update exclusive, right? Raw exclusive is the one. Ah, now this is actually interesting, right? Share, that's our shared lock thing. So when you acquire a shared lock on that table, you can't really change that table, right? Because it conflicts with raw exclusive, and raw exclusive is the one that acquire when you update, insert, and delete. So that's a dangerous one. So if your transaction acquires share, like a create index, create index can't be run in a transaction. I think not, right? Or maybe it is. Yeah. This is Postgres. It's not Oracle. So yeah, create index will acquire share lock on the table. And when you do that, you can't do any updates or insert or deletes to your table. And also, it conflicts with share row exclusive, which we talked about. No, we didn't talk about share row exclusive, yeah. And it acquire and it conflicts also with share update exclusive, which is acquired by vacuum. So if you're creating an index, you can't run a vacuum. Share row exclusive conflicts with pretty much everything, right? This mode protects a table against concurrent data changes and is self-exclusive so that only one session can hold it at a time. It's acquired by create trigger and other forms of alter table. So I don't see it much often, but it's kind of create trigger. How often you call create trigger? So I'm not really interested in this much. Exclusive. What is exclusive? This is acquired by refresh material view concurrently. So some of these are really interested to me. Some of them are really interesting. Like vacuum is interesting to me. And I want to know, like, now with this knowledge, what conflicts with what? And this is where we're looking at this beautiful table here. And let's see if I can zoom in a little bit here. I think that's fine. So we have access share on the left hand side. We request row share, row exclusive. And of course, we have to go back to understand what the heck are these, right? Access exclusive again. This is the hammer, right? And what is interesting is access share, which is the read, select. And we have access row share, which is select for update. And we have share update exclusive, right? Share update exclusive is the vacuum. Yes. Share update exclusive is the most important thing. So I can technically run a vacuum, right, while doing editing, right? And that's what really this box is the most important one to me. The reason I'm asking that is because you want to be able to run vacuum so you can freeze transactions as you continue, such that you can run as often as possible. Nobody should technically block you when you run vacuum. And that's the most important thing here. Right? The only time vacuum will be blocked, which is this guy, is if you do a share update exclusive. What the heck is that? It's the same thing. Like, of course, it doesn't make sense, right? Like you're, it's like, what else? If you re-index concurrently, for example, right? It's like, okay, my index is corrupt. I just want to re-index it. Just throw everything away and just like, re-index everything, right? For some reason, you want to do that. That will prevent you from running vacuums, which is dangerous. You want to run vacuums as often as possible to freeze transactions so you don't reach the transaction wraparound, right? And that's really a disaster if you do. And also share. What's share? Share was like created by index. Like, yeah, how often you create an index, right? I'm talking about just like the operation that just is so aggressive, right? Share row exclusive. What the heck is that? Share row exclusive. Let's go back and read that. Yeah, that's the create trigger one. Who cares? And exclusive and access exclusive. So that's the most important row to me, really. And as long as I can read, I can write. And row share, what the heck is row share again? Row share is by select for update. So I can also do select by update. For update, sorry, and still run vacuums normally, right? I suppose the selected rows can't be touched in that case, right? Let's continue. Row level locks. Now we're moving up in the stack here to row level locks.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
All right. So now we talked about table locks. It's time to talk about row level locks, which is very interesting. Yeah. There are four types of row level locks. These can be obtained explicitly. You know, you can actually say select for update, select for no key update, select for share, select for key share. And we're going to explain, talk about them and read through the doc here, understand what the difference between them. Understand that it depends on the lock here. Some locks can block other writers and other locals, but doesn't necessarily block other readers. And here's the most important thing here to understand. So these locks can be acquired, as I said, explicitly or also implicitly by updates and deletes. Deletes are easy, right? But updates are the interesting cases here, because updates, there are two types of locks that can be updated by update. And give you that because an update can happen to the row on a column that doesn't have an index, or it can happen to a column that has an index and or can be referenced by primary keys and foreign keys. So that makes a difference on these updates. So soft updates, if you will, and hard updates that can cause ramifications. So let's talk about for update, which is the first one. You can do select for update, right? And this select for updates causes the rows retrieved by select statement to be locked as though for update, as if you're actually updating it. This prevents them from being locked, modified, or deleted by other transaction until the current transaction ends. So this is like the most aggressive row locks there, right? That is other transaction that attempts to update, delete, select for update, select for no key share, select for key share, anything you do. If you have a row that is have been for updated, you're done. You can't do anything to all this stuff. You can read it though, right? It doesn't block normal reading of that row. Will be blocked until the current transaction. Conversely, select for update will wait for a current concurrent transaction that has run any of those commands on the same row. So same thing, right? If you want to run a select for update and someone had done a delete on that row, you can't do it, right? Because a deleted row is a deleted on another transaction, but might not have been committed yet. But now on your transaction, you want to read that deleted row. You can't do it. If you do select by update, can't, it will be blocked, right? And of course, in repeatable read and serializable, because they're using optimistic concurrency control, this thing will effectively be blocked, right? And you're going to get an error. It says, hey, serialization failed. Something changed from the moment you did this operation. Things has changed. And I can no longer guarantee that same operation will be read, you know, in a snapshot anymore. I can't do that. And you're going to get an error. Here's an important part. Select for update lock mode is also acquired by delete. If you do a normal delete on a row, that is as if someone did a select for update on that row. Very critical to understand. Yeah. So at that row level lock. And also by an update that modifies the values of certain columns, not all columns, right? Concurrently, the set of columns considered for update are those that have unique index that can be used in a foreign key. So that is the reference here. So now, with that said, how do I differentiate between updates that update the key and updates that doesn't update the key? There you go. The name is clear here. For no key update. Hey, I'm doing an update, but I'm not updating any keys. No index keys or anything like that. So this is identical to for update, I'm doing a for no key update in this case. I'm doing for update, but I'm not really updating any keys. Except that the lock is acquired. This is very similar to for update, but it's weaker. Right? This lock will not block for select for key share, for example, because I know that the thing I'm doing is not really updating keys. Right? So it's safe to share a key, if you will. Right? This particular lock is acquired when you do a normal update. If you update a column, right, implicitly, like doing an update, that particular lock will be acquired for no key update. Like as if you're updating like column B and B doesn't have an index, that lock will be acquired on that row. And that's a very soft lock. So you can technically, we'll see what conflicts with others here in a minute. For share, so behaves similarly to for no key update, except that as this acquires a shared lock rather than the exclusive lock on the retrieved row. Right? A shared lock blocks other transactions from performing update, delete, select for update, select for no key update. Right? You can even do that, but it does not prevent select for share and select for key share. Because that's the definition of shared lock. So now if you actually do want to do a shared lock, you do select for share and that row. And you can have 100 transactions doing select for share. That's fine. It doesn't conflict with each other. But only once you do that, no one can actually update the row. If you do that physically, updating the row becomes impossible because you just acquired a shared lock here. So this one, the for key share, will block you from making deletes, right? But will block you from making updates to columns that are indexed, that has keys, but it will not block you from making updates to columns that doesn't have keys. So it will not conflict with this for no key update. So let's go look at the table here. So yeah, I'm telling you, this is like a really head spinner. So let's go through the concurrent locking for row locks here. All right, let's take a look at the table here and see what conflicts with what. So row locks, for update is the kind of most aggressive one where it kind of conflicts with everything, you know? It is acquired by deletes. If you actually delete a row, it is acquired, right? If you update a row that has a primary or even a secondary key, any key really, right? That's from what we read here. It does not acquire when you do a normal update on a column that doesn't have an index, which is very critical to understand here, right? You can do those kind of updates, but they won't acquire that particular key lock, right? And it will conflict with all this stuff, right? So the second one is for key select for no key update, right? So it's an update, but it's not updating keys. So this is acquired when you actually explicitly say that select for no key update, right? Or when you do an update on a column that doesn't have an index. This is what gets locks. And by doing that kind of lock, you will still conflict with normal for update. So like you cannot update a column that has been deleted, right? Or you cannot update a column that has been updated with a key, right? That's critical to understand, right? But you can definitely update a column, right, that has been read for key share, right? So that for key update, right? It doesn't acquire for key share. So what for key shares doesn't seem like something will acquire that, because from what we read, nothing from Postgres acquires that except the user. So if you do an actual select for key share, you can technically update things that are not keys, right? That's what you can do, right? And then we could go with another harder share lock, which is for share, which basically will block any update to that. You can still acquire many shared lock on that guy, but you you want to prevent deletes and any kind of updates, right? Right. But if you want to acquire this for KeyShare, you can do a delete updates, but you may want to allow updates to non-keys. And in this case, you can acquire that. I can't think of an example, to be honest, to do that. But the most important thing to understand is just the delete example and the update example. The update example is the interesting one because it has two cases, right? Can I read? In all of these cases, you can absolutely read the row, even if you deleted or updated, right? That's fine, right? But if you want to simulate, now the question is like, how do I simulate an access lock or a shared lock versus exclusive lock? You can do that. So you do a select for update, and if you really want no one to read that, your application must submit selects for share all the time so that they get blocked, right? Because they will do that. And now you can play tricks with your application and you say, all right, I want to do a select for key share such that, hey, I'm really, really relaxed. I'll let you do delete. I'll let you do update to keys. But if you're updating things that has nothing to do with indexes, I'll let you do that. You can go a little bit lower there. Then let's run through the page locks here. Page level locks. In addition to tables and row locks, page level shared exclusive locks are used to control read write access to table pages in the shared buffer pool. So the shared buffer pool is where the Postgres put their pages in. So it's a shared memory between all the processes that Postgres spins off. And then it basically puts shared and exclusive locks to this. And absolutely there is no control here. Right? These locks are released immediately after a row is fetched or updated. Application developers normally need not to be concerned with this, but they are mentioned for completeness here. So this makes me think, like, what happened if I am updating or inserting or reading? Are we actually locking the page? So this tells me that no two transactions, these two things are serialized, right? The page locks are being obtained to prevent two processes from updating the same page. And understandably so, right? It doesn't make sense to have, like, this is, now we're at the OS level in memory, right? This is like basically a mutex. So it makes sense to have page locks. I'm just worried about performance when it comes to concurrency of multiple processes updating the same pages. Like, I've seen this in SQL Server, and I have no idea about Postgres level of page locking there. And assume I'm doing many inserts, right, to some table, or multiple transactions, right, multiple clients, let's say, because each client gets a process in Postgres, like a backend process. So those two might essentially perform the insert themselves and try to update the same page, right? And when you do that, these will contend on the last page effectively, because all of them will basically insert at the same tail page, right? That's where inserts go. And I'm just thinking, what is the ramification of doing that on concurrently? I think you will feel it. Because at the end of the day, a mutex must be acquired, like a lock must be acquired at the page level. Otherwise, you get corruption. Deadlocks are interesting. Here, I have the whole video about deadlocks, and they're talking about an example here where deadlocks can happen. So especially if you're doing explicit locking, like when you're controlling the transaction, like all of a sudden, you can easily get into a deadlock where this transaction needs this, but this transaction is also needing something and they are waiting on each other. For example, let's read an example here. If transaction one acquires an exclusive lock on table A and then tries to acquire an exclusive lock on table B, while transaction two has already an exclusive lock on B and now wants an exclusive tab on A, then neither of them can proceed, right? Note that deadlock can also occur as a result of row level locks, and thus they can occur even if the explicit locking is not used. Ooh, okay. How? I've seen it in SQL Server a lot, but especially with certain custom applications, right? Consider the case in which two concurrent transactions modify a table. The first transaction execute update accounts set balance equal balance plus 100, where account number equal 100, right? Equal 1111. So that does an update to the balance. And I don't know if balance is actually, what is balance? Balance is, I don't know if it's indexed or not, but let's assume it's not. So it's a for no key, right? Lock. This acquires a row level lock on the row with a specified account number. So that particular account number is now locked. Then the second transaction executes this. Update set account 2. Right, so someone just increased their account by 100. The other wanted to debit the account at the same time. Right, so it executed two queries in the same transaction. One to increase account 2222 by 100, which is okay. That are all locked. But then that other transaction also decrements the account 1111 by 100. So that has to wait. So that so far there's no deadlock here, right? The first update statement successfully acquires a row level lock on the specific row, so it succeeds updating. However, the second update statement finds that the row is attempted to update is already being locked, so it waits for the transaction that acquires the lock to complete. Transaction 2 is now waiting on transaction 1 to complete before it continues the execution. So far, no deadlock. Then the first transaction starts deducting account number 2, right? 2222 with 100. Now it wants to do that, and now it detects that there is a lock on that row and gets stuck. So absolutely, especially in these kinds of situations, you can get into a deadlock, right? Transaction 2 already holds a lock, so it waits for the transaction 2 to complete. Thus, transaction 1 is blocked on transaction 2. And transaction 2 is blocked on transaction 1. A deadlock condition. Postgres will detect this and abort the transaction. Immediately, Postgres will immediately detect this. Right, it's called the deadlock graph. So very careful, especially when two transactions try to update the same rows in certain order. So how do you solve this? Be consistent. The problem, this happened because we first updated row 1 and then the second transaction updated row 2 first. Like if you flip this order, then it would have, second transaction wouldn't have even permitted, started to begin with, right? But you can't always control this. That's the problem, right? The application. Advisory lock is probably its own topic, to be honest. But advisory lock, advisory lock are those locks that are acquired by the application. So let's take a look here. Postgres provides a mean for creating locks that have application defined meaning, as I said, right? These are called advisory lock because the system does not enforce their use, right? It is up to the application to use them correctly. So hey, you have this application, you create them, you deal with them, right? As a database, if someone tries to acquire this lock, I'll block it if it's already exist. Right? Advisory locks can be useful for locking strategies that are awkward for MVCC. And I've personally run into this a lot in cases. And I've personally run into cases where I had to use advisory lock, right? In SQL Server, they're called application level locks, and Oracle calls them something else. But yeah, sometimes you have specific the application has certain semantics that spans beyond transactions, really. And you can't really rely on that, right? So for consistency, you use the application level lock. All right, guys, so that was a very long podcast discussing all the types of locking in Postgres. I learned a lot about this, and I think I'll use this knowledge for, to understand when someone says, oh, our vacuums has been blocked and we can't run it. I want to call that out. I was like, what does that mean? Why would vacuum be blocked? Because now that I understand, the vacuum as an operation, what exactly does it block is truly important, right? Because it tells you like what kind of workload people are running, right? Because vacuum is not being blocked by anything. There are specific operation that is blocked by it. And understanding this level of details, it makes me at least want to learn more. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Goodbye.